They didn't want to have nothing to do with it. Okay. My father was like, you're crazy. You know, you should be paying for to record your music. And I went for it. And I went and sold the idea, and I didn't have the show. I sold the freaking show, a show that I didn't have. You have to know about business if you want to make it in show business. That's it. That's why it's called show business. Everybody was like, what did you drink? I want to have something like that that you're drinking. Everybody was afraid.
Okay.
Everybody was like threatened, and they thought that I was crazy.
He has 33 albums, 8 Grammy and Latin Grammy Awards, and has sold millions of records around the world. But what many may not know about regional Mexican music icon Pepe Aguilar is that more than 20 years ago, he launched his own record label, Machin Records, a 360 media company that has shaped the careers of his children, Angel Aguilar and Leonardo Aguilar, and is developing new talent like Irani. The music executive and artist joins Business School today to tell us what business lessons he learned from his parents, Antonio Aguilar and Flor Silvestre, how launching a website when no one else was changed his business, and why he decided to break away from the big labels and go independent at a pinnacle in his career. Plus, he tells us what it takes to put a national live tour together. I'm journalist Fernando Hurtado, and on Business School, I'm on a mission to map one of the fastest growing groups of entrepreneurs in the United States, Latinos. We're tracking how they got started, found success, and the most important lessons they've learned along the way. And remember, business school is expensive. Business school is free.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
All right, Pepe Aguilar, welcome to Business School. How are you?
Thank you. I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for stopping by. So I feel like one of the easiest ways to get to know someone is by looking at their credit card statement. We're not going to do that with you. But I am curious, what's the last thing you spent money on, big or small?
In the last few days, probably somebody bought a hamburger for me.
Okay.
I don't carry a wallet anymore.
A what?
Yeah.
Is it, are you an Apple Pay guy?
I'm an Apple Pay guy, but also there's always someone around me that takes care of that.
And how often are you eating burgers? Is that a common expense for you?
For sure. I love burgers. Are you kidding? Yeah. I mean, I also love a 3 Michelin star restaurant, but I mean, I eat everything.
Burgers are a good safe bet.
Yes.
Usually.
Depends on the place you go eat it out.
Okay.
Just kidding. All burgers are good.
All burgers are created equal. So, Pepe, music is in your veins, and
yes,
it may be literally in your veins because you were born during a tour stop of your parents.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming you don't remember anything of that day.
No.
If you do, speak now. But assuming you don't, what did your parents tell you about that day, or what do you know about how that happened?
Well, they were touring. Mm-hmm. It was back in 1968. And my mother toured and sang and performed until like 2 weeks before I was born. So she was like this, not on horseback, but she did perform on stage, which is kind of not a very good decision, but it was 1968, okay? So people weren't as aware as we are right now. I was born on a tour, and my parents didn't plan it that way. You know, they wanted me to born in Mexico, but then they were always working, and that's what happened. Never lived in San Antonio. I was born in San Antonio, Texas. Never lived there. It was just part of the tour. And But I toured with my parents for 20 some years, so coming to America, coming to the U.S. was a regular thing for me.
And you're immediately surrounded by music. And what I think is interesting is that as much as you and you have built a career off of regional Mexican music, one of your first music loves was rock music. Mm. And as someone who's perfectly bilingual in English and Spanish, did you ever consider maybe going the more rock English music route?
I did some rock in the beginning of my career, but it was in Spanish,
okay. Not
in English. I have never considered singing rock in English, but I did sang some rock in Spanish, and I was very good at it, so thank God, because I like mariachi and I like rancheras more than rock to perform
it. And you mentioned that later on you start your own label. Before even that, like, I'm guessing when you were a teenager or a kid, do you remember when you started seeing music more so than a career, but also the business side of things and music as a business? When did that kind of light bulb turn on for you?
You know, I've always been questioning everything, like religion and why is everything this way? Why things are run the way they are run? Since I was a very young child, I've been questioning myself those things. So I saw my dad working all the time on a movie set or in a recording studio or at a stage. And there was something that I was very curious about what drives him to do that, because I was a very lazy young child, I couldn't see myself doing that. It was puzzling for me. Later on in life, I found out what drive and passion means, you know, and having a dream, and that's what he had. And I saw that as an example from a very early age. If you want to do something, you got to do it with passion, and you got to do it all in. Otherwise, it's not going to be the result you expect. And that was his example. Right. So when I started doing my thing, that was the operating system. You know, I was very passionate, all in, and I didn't care what happened. My dreams were more important than anything else.
Yeah, and can you fill us in a little bit on the context at the time? Because I think a lot of people hear an artist and they're like, oh, an artist is with a label. A label's kind of, for those who even maybe know how it works, a label's the one kind of, you know, helping the artist produce the music, but they're with the label. Back in the day, when you were starting off, what was the common mainstream way to produce music? Was it that same model?
Okay, so if our audience, the audience of the podcast, were Martians,
okay,
and they didn't know anything about anything here in this planet, okay, to do music the way it's established and the way it was established back then in the 90s, 80s when I started, you needed to have a third party, which in this case was a record company or somebody that could deliver your music to the masses. You could only, as an artist, create the music if you had the means to create it. If you were a composer, an arranger, a musician, not just a singer, if you created everything, you will also need someone to put that music out. You couldn't put it outside yourself. Now it's a different story. Now you can do it all from your phone, right? You can create everything from your phone. And especially nowadays with AI and the Internet of Things, which is around the corner, and everything connected, it's a whole different story than when I first started in this business. When I first started in this business, it's more about dreaming than planning.
Explain that.
you had more the dream of being an artist to put your music out there. The 99% of artists didn't think about the business.
I see.
It was more about your dreams. It was more about putting your music out there and being seen And that was a mistake.
Oh. Well, so you start off with that traditional model, as would anyone else, I imagine.
Yeah.
But then you do a shift. What caused that shift for you to say, you know what, I'm going to go and start my own label?
Well, I saw that things weren't balanced and artists were being abused and the business people weren't doing the business correctly.
Okay.
You know, it wasn't fair.
Okay. To the artist, the composer.
To the artist. To the main, you know, asset of the business.
So then you start Equinoxia and Machine Records.
So then I start fighting my way. First I signed with a company.
Okay.
And then when I found out this thing that I just told you, or at least felt that it wasn't fair, I started asking the record company for a better deal.
Uh-huh.
I said, hey, I'm selling this amount of money, so why are you giving me 5% of this? This is stupid. This is absurd. And their answer was, well, that's the way the business is run, and we're not the only ones doing that. Everybody does it. That was their answer.
Deal with it.
Yeah. And I was like 18 years old.
Okay.
And it was like, heck with this. I mean, the heck with this, pardon my French, but this ain't right.
Mm-hmm.
So at 19, I hired a lawyer and sued the company.
Wow. Okay. And what are your parents saying around all
they
this?
They didn't want to have nothing to do with it.
Okay.
My father was like, you're crazy. You know, you should be paying to record your music. Yeah, that was their paradigm. They were there. You know, they didn't make music out of selling music, so they didn't care. Those artists, they just wanted to make shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's absurd. Mm. That's stupid. That's crazy. I mean, we're creating everything. How can you not care for that? You know, so I went on and did it myself and started one of my first legal battles against the company. That was my first one. I have had three.
Okay.
But that was very significant because that was the first one in the history of music in Mexico that did something like that.
And what were industry people telling you? Like
they hated me. People in the industry hated me. I was the black sheep.
And were you concerned at all? Like,
oh,
man.
Oh, heck no. Huh. That was my gasoline. That was my drive. Even though I was very young, it was like, am I pissed? I'm pissing everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's mad. I must be doing something right.
Mm.
So I kept on going.
You stayed on that path. And what I think is interesting, if GoDaddy.com is correct, on March 3rd, 1998... you registered PepeAguilar.com. Tell me about the decision to create a website and to create a website back then.
I saw in technology an emancipation route.
Okay.
I saw it from the beginning. I am a gamer. I started playing games on the internet since it was possible. And that kind of shifted my mind in the way of seeing things and seeing technology and seeing ways to use that technology towards my goals and careers and passions. So when the digital world started in music, when you were able to use that technology, everything changed for me. That was back in the 90s, I don't remember, but I've been pretty much into technology since I started my career. So every technology that was available, I was adopting it.
As it came out.
Now it's crazy. Now technology grows exponentially, and it's impossible to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to focus on just one side of it, and that's what I do now.
pick and choose, kind of pick and choose your battles.
Yes.
What I thought was really interesting is that there was a telenovela in Mexico that later aired in the United States that I think a lot of people will recognize your voice from, and that was Destilando Amor around 2006, 2007. I've always been curious about the business implications or ramifications of having your song play Monday through Friday for 6 to 7 months as the telenovela airs on, you know, broadcast television, not only in Mexico, but Latin America and the United States. What was the aftermath of a moment like that where your song is played every single day?
Well, how deep do you want to get to that rabbit hole? Because...
Let's go deep.
I mean, that's one of the things that are not very well established yet in order to be fair.
Okay.
Up until now. So a telenovela or a program that is going to be playing your song every day for months, it depends on the country, but it should give you a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't. What they do is that they fix a rate from the beginning, and you do it more for promotion than for money. So that's why you don't see me doing that a lot anymore.
Every season. Well, I compare it kind of to the Super Bowl, where, you know, Usher just did his Super Bowl performance. Mm-hmm. You don't get paid, like, the people think you get paid, like, millions of dollars. You don't.
No.
But what you do see is a spike in sales and streams. Is that similar to kind of what
for
you
sure,
see?
For sure. I mean, that was a great example, the Usher example. It wouldn't surprise me if Usher paid a few million dollars to do that.
To put on the show.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he didn't pay the NFL. Uh-huh. He didn't bribe the NFL. But if he got that chance to be seen by hundreds of millions of people, who do you have to kill? You know, because the consequences of that are going to represent, for him, $300 million, more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And he just spent two.
Right. The return on investment is there.
Although you have to give a good performance.
Uh-huh.
So that's when the gamble starts.
Yeah.
You have to gamble on yourself. You have to be sure about yourself. You are the product.
Yeah.
You are the product. You're selling yourself and you know how much you're worth. Because I can assure you that Usher is a businessman.
Mm-hmm.
A very savvy one.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the way artists are now. You know, I started being one of the first.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not business savvy right now, you should be dedicated yourself to another trade, something else. You have to know about business if you want to make it in show business. That's it. That's why it's called show business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Otherwise, it'd just be called a show.
Exactly.
So I want to go back to the start of Equinoccio and Machin. You're this young guy who is having this legal battle. You decide to start your own label. Like, what is the first step to starting a company and registering? Did you know how to do that?
Ignorance. That's the first step. You need to be very innocent and need to be wishfully thinking because it's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
If I would have known 24 years ago what I know right now, that is what was going to cost me to get to where I am in work that is not artistic related.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, man. I probably would have think about things a little bit more.
Uh-huh.
But it's been worth it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been a lot of work. It's been dog years for me of work. I have to work with many different hats all the time and like wearing them really good. Not just put in there. Mm-hmm. You have to wear them completely. And that it's been hard, but I'm not a victim at all. I don't feel myself as a victim. I think that I would have made some changes in what I've done in order to not work as I have worked, because I worked a lot to get to where I am. But there was no path. There were no roads. There was no history to follow. So I was just going, you know, flying by wire, you know, by instruments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Building the airplane as you fly.
Yeah, you were making the path.
Yeah. So in 2009, you decide to launch your own footwear line around that time.
Oh, don't remind me of that.
Oh.
That's okay. It was just something that was not successful. We can talk about it, no problem.
Well, but go how ahead, do you choose, like, you know, like that opportunity presents itself. How do you choose, yeah, let's go for it, or you know what, maybe not worth it? What did you learn from that experience?
I mean, I've always been curious about other businesses, not only the thing that I do. So I'm a born entrepreneur. So I've been in many other businesses. I've had greenhouses and created, planted tomatoes, and I have sports teams and different things. And this shoe making episode was a very ambitious one, but I was very naive and didn't know anything about the business. Mm-hmm. So. Boys and girls, that's a no-no. If you're going to go into something, you need to know a little bit about it, you know, in order not to go 25 years to know what I know right now. Mm. Like I said, probably I would have taken a different path, maybe a little more education, maybe maybe something that could help me with my everything. So this case is the same, but... I forgot what you asked me, but anyway.
Yeah, what'd you learn from it? And it sounds it was, you know the industry you're going into or know the business?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
exactly.
A good lesson. Something I'm really excited to ask you about. In 2012, you get your star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, which is a massive deal because immediately I picture... And I saw the video of you with a star. And that's a visual that a lot of people see. For a lot of people, it's a long time coming. Finally has one. For a lot of people, maybe it's their introduction to who Pepe Aguilar is. Mm. How does something like that impact your career?
Everything that is relevant and accepted by society as a good thing helps your career.
Okay.
Playing in the Super Bowl is like one of the highest things that can help your career. Mm-hmm. Having a star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame, it's an important thing in your career. I don't know how many tickets you're going to sell with that or how many songs people are going to listen more because you have a Hollywood star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame. But it's a very good, like, ¿cómo se dice? Reminder of who you are, validation in your trade. So of course it helps, but everything is different. Like a number one in Billboard helps you in a certain way. Mm-hmm. Like a sold out tour helps you in a different way. Mm-hmm. Playing in the Super Bowl helps you in a different way. Having a star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame helps you in a different way. Not only one thing is going to give you everything you need. You need to have hundreds of those things, and you need to not stop. Mm-hmm. So now, okay, so is the Hollywood Walk of Fame? What's next? So is the Super Bowl? What's next? Mm-hmm. So it's a never-ending story.
Outdoing yourself.
Yes.
So next I want to ask you about how having kids changes you as a person, how it affects your career. But first, I want to make time for someone else to ask you a question. And this question comes from a Comcast Rise Award recipient. So Comcast Rise supports the growth of all small businesses and individuals committed to uplifting their communities. Rise has awarded more than $125 million in monetary, marketing, and technology grants to businesses all over the United States. So let's hear the question.
Hi, my name is Sheila Lopez, and I am the proud owner of Indiglo Holistics, located here in Baltimore, Maryland. Can you provide an example of a tough decision you had to make and how it turned out for your business, whether it was good or bad, and the lesson that you learned?
Thank you for asking. Hello. So, I think that at a certain level, in being an entrepreneur, all your decisions are important and difficult because everything is on the line. It's your business. So you're not being employed, and it's not like, oh, you didn't get a certain performance and probably that's going to affect your bonus. But your life is not going to change a lot if you screw up or if you make it very big on whatever project it is that you're doing. Right here, if you own your company, if you are your own product, every decision is important. And some of them is like life and death decisions. And you got to take those every year. Mm-hmm. Like one example, Jaripeo Sin Fronteras, this show that I made and created with horses and everything. That was crazy. I mean, we're not curing cancer. We're not flying anyone to outside the solar system. It's just show business. Uh-huh. It's just a show, okay? But for me and my world, it was huge because it was a huge undertaking, and I was alone. Mm. Like, I had a managing team, and I had partners and everything, but when I was doing very well by myself. Mm-hmm. And then in one of the meetings, some people were on Zoom, some people were in person, and they said, you know what, guys, I have an idea. Uh-huh. I don't know if you're going to like it, but it involves horses, and it involves doing a new show, and it involves investing a couple of $1 million and bringing some people to tell you what to do. And everybody was like, what did you drink? I want to have something like that that you're drinking. Everybody was afraid. Okay. Everybody was like threatened, and they thought that I was crazy because you never change horses in the middle of a race if you're doing good, if you're going up, if you're going in front. Mm-hmm. But that's been me. So I felt it. I felt that it was a good thing. I felt that it was needed. Uh-huh. And I went for it.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget. Mm-mm-mm. Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
And I went and sold the idea to CMN,
okay,
which is a company that makes shows live. And I didn't have the show. I sold the freaking show, a show that I didn't have.
Okay.
Don't tell anybody. Okay, so she's asking, you know, gutsy decisions or things that have changed me for the better. Uh-huh. Will this change me for the better? Okay. This decision was life or death. If it would have been bad, it would have cost me millions of dollars and a couple of years of my career. So there was a lot of things on the line.
Reputation,
credibility, you know, leverage with my associates. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot.
Everything.
And but I went ahead and did it. Okay. And it was a success, a huge success. Bigger than I was expecting. And that's a story.
So you bet on yourself and you believed in yourself.
And I have some horror stories too. Uh-huh. This is one that is a successful one.
Okay.
But I, of course, have horror stories that I've cried a lot, man. I've cried so many times in my career, like with such a passion. And it's okay. You know, it's part of it.
So I want to hear about how you turn Jaripeo Sin Fronteras into Jaripeo, or how it changes and what we can expect from Jaripeo Hasta Los Huesos. But before that, I want to talk about the year 2006, when a company with a green logo pops up in Sweden. I don't know if you can guess what I'm going to ask.
What are you going to ask me about Spotify?
Yes. So Spotify and the shift from physical CDs and radio even to streaming. How did that change your business model and kind of how you approached music?
Remember that I am from a generation that live shows are their main source of income. And that hasn't changed for me. It only grew because now I have another source of revenue, which is live, the streamings and the new technologies. Mm-hmm. So I just adapted. It's all about evolution and adapting, if you want, if you can.
Was the kind of the decline of physical CDs, was that ever, did that make you kind of stop a little?
No. Like I said at the beginning of our conversation, I've always embraced technology with very optimistic and positive view. Mm-hmm. Always. So when I was doing LPs and 45 singles, which a lot of you guys don't know what I'm talking about, you can Google it, I was happy. And then it changed from cassettes and that to CDs. Uh-huh. I was so happy, like when it changed to CDs. And then when CDs were all over and we put everything on the cloud, I was very happy. A little scared to have everything in the hands of third parties. Everything that I own, technologically wise and musically wise. I mean, but that's probably because I was born in the last century and I like physical things mm-hmm. more than just intangible ones.
Yeah.
But that's another story. Anyway, it didn't affect me at all. To the contrary, it has made my business grow a lot more.
Nice. So in the late 90s, early 2000s, you have your kids. And then, you know, after the Spotify, advent of Spotify and streaming, your kids are much older at this point. Tell me about the decision. Like, was there ever any hesitation to let your kids start with a music career as well?
No. And I didn't push them either.
Okay.
So it was their decision. They did travel with us, so mm-hmm. I think that had something to do mm-hmm. with their decision and becoming artists, because they were going with an artist, touring and just having fun. And that life, from that perspective, mm-hmm. all comfortable and everything fine, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. If you're a kid, you're traveling, I mean, you're meeting people, you're eating different food, you're being praised and loved, and you go to places that are full, that they love your dad. So, of course, they wanted to do that. Mm-hmm. And two of them did. Mm-hmm. Two of them didn't. They didn't like it. But when they said, hey, I want to do this, it was natural for me. I didn't think twice about it. I said, well, whatever you want to do. And also, if they have said, I want to be a race car driver.
Uh-huh. Go for it.
Go for it. I mean, it's your life. It's not mine. I'm not just your dad, not your owner.
Yeah. But what I think is interesting is that, you know, having Angela and Leonardo in the music space, this also now gives you a chance to, like, see what it's like now to start off in this new age. What are some of the biggest differences you've seen in how an artist starts a music career now versus when you were starting?
It's totally different, everything. I mean, we would have to make another podcast because everything has changed. Everything has changed. They have more control over their music. Mm-hmm. They have more control over their careers. They have more ways to connect. They can connect immediately. If you're good, there's just no way that mm-hmm. people won't see you. So that didn't exist back in the day. Mm-hmm. The planets needed to be aligned mm-hmm. in order for you to be seen. Uh-huh. Now it's up to you and if you're good or not. Yeah. It really is. That's crazy. Because you don't have an excuse.
Yeah.
Oh, the record company did this. Nope. You did it wrong. That's why you're not doing what you needed to do or what you want to do money-wise and artistically wise.
Yeah. And with Machin, you have a 360... Machin and Equinox, you have a 360 management company label.
Yeah.
How has it been to work with them through that? I mean, you're not just their dad, but you're also their business partner, manager, et cetera. How does that work?
It's been good. Sometimes it's challenging.
Yeah.
Of course. You know, and especially now that they are grown-ups mm-hmm. and they're savvy and they're business savvy. They were educated by me mm-hmm. and my wife, which is my partner in business. So everything that they have seen me fought for, now they're fighting for, mm-hmm. but they're fighting me. But I'm not being the record company that was fighting me. Mm-hmm. So the contracts that I give my artists are unique mm-hmm. in the industry because I went through so many things and I suffer so much. I wouldn't like them to suffer the same, whether they're my kids or not. So Machin and Equinoxio's contracts, just so you know, are the best in the industry. Mm. The best in the industry, because they're made for artists. Mm. So my kids own their stuff. We are able to exploit it for a little while, but then they come back to them. They retain that. And that, Luis Miguel can say that. Mm.
Is that similar to the Taylor Swift debacle where she didn't own it, now she does own her? Is that similar?
Yeah, she signed. I'm not an expert on Taylor Swift. There's a lot of people that are going to correct me here. But what I understand is that her first contract, it was signed the old way, where companies keep your rights. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Forever. Like, if you signed a contract with a record company as a songwriter, singer-songwriter, back in 1985, they will be the owners of that music.
In perpetuity.
In perpetuity. Now they changed those laws for 30 years, but when you signed it, it was in perpetuity.
Wow.
And that was crazy. That's why I started a legal battle against the record company. Anyway, I went somewhere else. So you were telling me about my kids. So they have a very, very good contract. Mm-hmm. And they don't fight me because of that. They fight because they want more promotion. But then again, all artists do, including me.
So one thing that I think also sets you apart in the industry is that I went on your YouTube and I found 400-plus episodes of El Vlog. Tell me about the decision to start this series that opens you up to your fans in really, really detailed ways. You know, they're touring with you. You're talking about meetings with them. But not only to start that idea, tell me also about what goes into sustaining that and something that is also very, very well produced. It's not just like, oh, you pull up a camera and you upload the video. So tell me a little bit about El Vlog.
El Vlog was something that came up out of that possibility of being connected being connected that way for the first time in my career. I went crazy. I went crazy. It was like, oh my God, this is perfect. I'm not going to need a middleman. I can do it myself. I can promote what I want. You know, it was perfect. So 8.5 years ago, I started that blog. Okay. And it had his peak. At its peak, every single episode had more than 1 million views.
Wow.
And we have some vlogs that have 4 million views. Now we're in 50,000, 60,000. That thing is gone, that particular concept. Mm-hmm. Now we're doing something different that we're going to come up and explore and see if people like that. Its name is, instead of El Blog, its name is El Doc.
El Doc.
As a documentary.
So it's less frequent, I'm guessing?
It's
just one?
It's going to be every 10 days now, not every week, but it's going to be more like a never-ending documentary. So the format is more like a documentary. It's not boring.
Uh-huh.
Okay, it's pretty cool.
I love documentaries. I don't think they're boring.
I love documentaries, too.
Yeah.
They're my favorite genre of movie making. So I kind of went there, and we're also starting with different property on YouTube. So on the business side of it, it's amazing, because if you create content, you're going to keep on collecting.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of hours in YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a business.
Yeah.
That's a company. And we create more and more and more and more and more content. The difference between people that just uploads Pink Noise and make money out of it, or whatever it is, that there are a lot of people doing that on the platforms, and us, is that we provide some quality product and entertainment for you. So it's okay if the platform gives us some money for that.
Yeah. I think especially now with this newer generation, it might even, and I think it does give younger viewers a way to connect with the Aguilar family.
Yeah.
Because this is the vlog generation. I mean, if you said vlog 25 years ago, people would be like, what is that? You misspelled blog. But you're talking about vlog. You just released your new single, Hasta Que Me Duermo. And in one of the videos, you talk about, one of the El Blog videos, you talk about how with this song, it's a fusion of rock and ranchera. And you were like, rock isn't really trending right now. Neither is ranchera. But I decided to fuse them because I like them and put them out. So how do you balance that, you know, passion with ensuring something has some form of commercial success?
Oh, that's the $64,000 question. If I had that formula, I would be Coldplay, Jay-Z, and Usher at the same time. You know, I just go with my gut.
Okay.
And that's what I've been trusting since I started my career. You know, what I really like, what I really dig, what I'm really passionate about, what I really feel, that's where I'm going to go for. So I like Corridos Tumbados, you know, the music that is amazing right now and putting Mexican music scene in everywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. And for the first time in the history of music, a Mexican song was the number one song in the world in many platforms. Wow. Yeah, but that's not me.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, it's fine. It's trendy. It's what's people listening, but it's not me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to do that if it's not me. I'm going to consume it. I like it. Mm-hmm. I like some of it. But not to make it for myself. So it was the perfect moment to step a little bit out of the game and say, I'm not going to do what some of you people, not the fans, but some of you people in the industry are expecting me to do. I'm going to do whatever the heck I want to do. So it's like part of my persona and personality is not that I'm egocentric or self-centered, or maybe I am a little bit, but I'm more in love and more passionate about what I do than preoccupied about what others think. So, yeah, right now I'm doing something that is completely out of what the industry would tell you to do. Rock and roll, man. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I really don't. I'm proud of the music that I did. It makes me cry. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel to a very deep extent, to a very deep level.
Mm-hmm.
So that for me is successful. That for me is it's success. That to me at this time in my life is the most successful thing and the most successful outcome that I can have. Now, if I can sell an arena tour with this album and this song, I wouldn't be pissed. Thank you so much if you liked it. If I made you feel with this music, that's twice as success as me being happy. But it's all about that now. It's all about being real. So, yeah, it's not trendy. I don't have any duets. It's rock. It's mariachi. It's romantic music. It's me.
But it's authentic to you, and I think it seems like that's your operating mode.
Yeah.
Modus operandi. That's a fancy word I was looking for.
Yes.
So I want to ask you about Jaripeo hasta los huesos, but before I ask you about that, I think for some of our viewers who may not know what Jaripeo means, can you briefly explain that?
Yes, Jaripeo was the very original form that the haciendas used to not domesticate, but to tame bulls and cattle. A lot of people don't know that. A lot of people think that Jaripeo was originated either in Michoacán or in Guerrero, and it was originated maybe 50, 60 years ago. Nope, that is not true. The word Jaripeo is originated back in the colonization of Spain and Mexico, okay? So that's where it comes from. And the word Sin Fronteras, by the way, I had to come up with the name because my associates didn't come up with a name for the show. They were supposed to do that. And then they call me and say, we have 2 hours to come up with a name. You have 2 hours, only 2 hours. I say, what the heck is wrong with you guys? This is the biggest gamble in my life for the last 20 years, and I have 2 hours to baptize it? So I came up with that. You say, you know, something that is very original from the genesis of this thing. Mm-hmm. And something that also meant that we have no limits, no borders, no boundaries. The sky's the limit. So that's why I said, sin fronteras. And then a president wanted to put walls here and everything. So it was like, sin fronteras, you know? And it worked. It worked. The name kind of steers something in the fans.
It resonated. Yeah. And then tell me about the name, Jaripa Hasta Los Huesos. How did that one come about?
Oh, okay. That's because Hasta Los Huesos, to the bones. It's because we changed everything from the first and the second show that we did from Jaripeo, which I've done mm-hmm. two editions, different shows, mm-hmm. different things. So this is the third one. And this one is about the Day of the Dead. Everything is about the Day of the Dead in Jaripeo. Well, actually, everything is about Mexico right now. Mexico is it is trending all over the world. Mm-hmm. All over the world. And that is one of the traditions that most people know, the Day of the Dead, mariachis, tequila. Mm-hmm. But the Day of the Dead is one very popular one. We're not doing it because it's popular. We're doing it because I like skulls. And I like death. Not the actual death being to die, but I like the way Mexicans see death. You know, it's like a folklore thing. Mm-hmm. We dance with it. We laugh with it. So that's what we have in this show.
So with a tour, a national tour, I've always been curious about the margins. You know, I'm sure you invest a lot of money into it. Can you tell us a little bit about, like, how much comes back and how you measure a successful return on investment?
Well, I'm a weird animal because the way I do business is not the way artists normally do business.
Okay.
Artists get hired and by a company. You could say Live Nation, probably AEG, maybe CMN, or an independent promoter, and they buy their tours. Mm-hmm. So there are many ways of making money that way. You get a guarantee, and then you get a back end after that guarantee. So okay. That means if you put, let's say, 4,000 people, that will be your break-even, 4,000 people. And then after that, you pay your expenses, whatever it is, publicity, if you're the promoter, taxes, stagehands, okay. the rent of the plays and everything. And then after that, the back end, you give the artist probably, it depends on the deal, it could go from 75% to 95% of the back end. So that's where you make money more if you are hired as an artist. I don't get hired. I do my shows. I promote my shows. So my margins, it's a different way of doing business. My margins go from 25% to sometimes 40%. Sometimes it's less than 25%. Okay. But it depends on the market. It depends on the venue. It depends on everything. I have a lot more risk than if you were just hired, mm-hmm. because you're hired, you're just hired. But also, a promoter takes around 30% of the business. That's approximately mm-hmm. what it takes. And if you take that figure out of the equation, that 30% goes to my company. So that's why I promote your own shows. Mm-hmm. But it's not that easy and not that, as I told you right now, it's really a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And as you can see, the margins are high for a business that size. Normally, it would be like 20% margin for a business that size if you were selling glasses or something like that, and that would be good, right?
Yeah.
But in show business, it's a little higher than that. But it's a lot more risk.
Yeah, and I love this. This was in one of your vlog episodes. You were talking to a reporter about this upcoming tour, and you said, where is it? You said it is going to have someone from Cirque du Soleil coming to help you with the production design, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then you bought 150 meters of screens, and you're using artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
That all sounds very expensive.
Yep.
So, but tell me, like, why those, which sound awesome. I'm like, oh, I want to go to that tour. Tell me about why go so premium with this tour?
Well, I'm very proud of my roots. I think that we're just barely, I told you that I think that Mexico is, it's trending all over the world. Mm-hmm. And we haven't even seen nothing, just a little tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. So I'm very proud of my roots, very proud of my culture, tremendously proud of them. And I want to present it the best way possible. So it's been a long time. I've done good in my life. I cannot complain. So I'm not going to hesitate. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to be stingy when it comes out of showing what you're most proud of. So that's why we're creating it the best way I know how to, with the best people that I know, and presenting it in the best venues in the world. So that's why I'm very proud of my roots. And I think Mexican culture and Mexican music is way bigger than an artist or my career. So I'm focusing on making that the star, you know, the culture, the music, the festivity of the Day of the Dead,
mm-hmm.
all that. So that's what's keeping me motivated, you know. It's a huge undertaking to create the show like that, but now I'm used to making big shows and those kinds of figures. So it's kind of hard for me to go back.
Right. To scale back. That'd be,
yeah,
almost feel unnatural.
To the contrary, I'm creating more shows now that don't necessarily have me in them.
Oh. Can you say anything else?
Sure. I'm with this guy, Cirque du Soleil guy, which there's a lot of chemistry with uh-huh. him, a lot of chemistry, and he's so freaking talented. Like, uh-huh. he comes out with so many things that I wouldn't even dream of.
Mm-hmm.
We're thinking about exploring more of the this Mexican culture that I think is huge and amazing, and there's one pre-Hispanic show that we're working on already. But it's a pre-Hispanic show done in the 21st century.
Okay. So it's like old meets new.
Yes.
Okay.
Very
that.
Crazy.
Cool. Good tease.
Yes.
So I want to talk about that first opening show for Jaripeo Hasta Los Huesos. Tell me about what goes into preparing, like, the day before that first show. And once you're doing that first show, like, is the show pretty much set? Or is that the first time you're seeing, like, how is the public going to react to this concept?
Oh, yeah. That's the first time we're seeing how the public is going to react. But we have many days of rehearsals before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we rent the Honda Center. This time we have rented many huge arenas before we start every gig.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not every gig, every tour.
Okay.
No. So this is no exception. We're going to be in at Anaheim for 3 days rehearsing, and then everything is time coded.
Okay.
So I can interrupt it because I like that. I can interrupt and like freestyle a little mm-hmm. bit if I want to say something. If I want to sing another song. I do that, and I make them suffer tremendously. All the technicians, all the engineers, everybody, all the teams, because we have different teams mm-hmm. in placement. 150 people work, mm-hmm. and out of those, 90 of those in production. So it's a lot. So we need definitely to rehearse, and we are going to do that. And then after that rehearsal, if everything goes good, it should always be the same. Like mm-hmm. it. Everything needs to happen like clockwork, but it never does.
I love it. Well, now we know all that goes into.
Yeah.
I didn't know about the time code, like the light cues, everything is.
Everything.
Yeah. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I'm like, how do they, it's so many moving parts.
Sound design even. Yeah. That's a new thing uh-huh. that a lot of people don't know. Sound design is like special effects.
Mm-hmm.
there, all of a sudden you hear boom over here. And that's, next time you go to a concert, look for that. And everybody's doing it every time, more and more and more. That the same thing that is happening, or something that is happening on the screens that has to do also with the music, and it's also synchronized with a special effect, and it's also synchronized with a special sound effect.
Okay.
So you get a whole freaking experience with multimedia.
It's like four dimension.
Yes, sir.
All right, I have two questions to end, and these are rapid fire questions.
Okay.
But I'm going to stop calling them rapid fire because it's more like slow fire. They're a little complicated. So take your time answering them. But my first question is, what is your earliest money memory? Like when you first remember the concept of, or learning the concept of money. I'll tell you mine. I learned my numbers 1 to 100 when I was in first grade. I was a little late. And my friend asked me, how much do your parents make? And I was like, $100. I was like, that's right. And they're like, oh yeah, my parents make $200. I was like, oh, I don't know any numbers bigger than that. So then I went at home and asked my parents how much they made. And that was my first realization of money. So what was your first realization of money as a concept?
I used to work since I was a little boy. My father put me to work in the ranch and paid me.
Okay.
I didn't know he was doing it just to teach me the value of work and making your own money. I thought that I was really working.
Mm-hmm.
He made me believe that I was really important and really working. Mm. So every Saturday, I went with all the workers of the ranch to the places where they get paid. And I got paid like 20 pesos, and that a week. And that could buy you, just so you know, maybe a pair of pants, a pair of blue jeans. Not bad for a little kid.
Yeah.
But I didn't buy a pair of blue jeans. I was waiting because... we didn't drink sodas back then. We drank water out of the rivers or whatever when we were on horses working. So that day was a special day because there was the soda, this Coca-Cola, there was 2 pesos that the guy that paid us,
uh-huh,
used to sell them.
Okay.
So for me, that was amazing. You know, that thing is 2 pesos. Oh, my God, I only got 20. I got to save. I'm not going to drink one. Mm-hmm. But that was... when I started learning the value of money, because you could get things with it and things that you liked, right?
Nice things.
For me, it was a Coke.
I love it. All right, last question. If you had a business school course, what would it be called? And it has to start with Pepe 101 colon. So like something like, mine would be like how to not get scammed outside of an ATM. I'll tell you that story later. Mm-hmm. But what would your business school course be
okay,
called?
So it would have to be, of course, made for artists,
okay,
made for people in the entertainment business. And it would have to say, Pepe Aguilar, curses on. No. That's a different class. Pepe Aguilar will teach you how to believe in yourself more than what other people wants you to believe about yourself. Mm. It was a lot of words, but you know what
I meant.
Let's
do Pepe 101, how to believe in yourself more than... no, it's still too long. More than others believe in
yourself. Okay, well, let's think about it. Pepe Aguilar...
Oh, Pepe 101, maximize the belief in yourself.
That's it.
There we go.
There you go, because that involves everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Okay, we'll trademark that.
Let's trademark it.
Give me 10%.
Let's make a business. Let's do it. Perfect. I would have paid you 15, but that's okay. You only asked for 10.
I shortchanged myself. That's my business lesson. Don't shortchange yourself. All right, Pepe, thank you so much for coming by Business School. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Hey, man, if anytime, thank you. And there's a lot more things that I would love to tell you about what I've done. Maybe you can have me again.
Absolutely. We'll do part 2 of the course.
Thank you,
Pepe,
man.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hey, it's Fernando. If you like this episode, go back and subscribe to get notified when new episodes drop. And if you really, really like the episode, make sure to leave a review. It helps others find the most affordable business school out there right now, Business School. Thanks for listening.